You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Another mini episode, Hermer and Edna McLaughlin. December 10th, 1973, the small town of Cortland, Ohio, a town at the time that had one police officer, would have their sense of community security shattered when someone killed well-known residents, Hermer 70 and Edna 75. There were lots of witnesses and leads in the very beginning, but 49 years later, this case still remains unsolved. Edna was born April 30th, 1916. The place of her birth is not known, but we know she graduated from Linesville High School in Crawford County, Pennsylvania. It's as her job as a telephone operator that she would meet Hermer.
We're sorry, all circuits are busy.
Hermer was born September 8th, 1903 in Greenville, Pennsylvania. He would drop out of school in 8th grade to work the farm to help support his family. He worked at Riverna Arsenal and would spend 2 years at Republic Steel. Between the two, there was a 13-year age difference, and family wondered how these two even crossed paths. Edna and Hermer would get married in October 1973. The couple would go on to have two beautiful daughters, Carol and Mary Rose. In 1973, Cortland, Ohio was a village that had not yet been considered a city, and at the time, the population was just shy of 3,000 people. So it was a very small town, and this is where Edna and Hermer would decide to raise their girls. The couple would run a corner store together, and Hermer was a volunteer firefighter, so they were very ingrained in their community. When their girls were all grown up and started having families of their own, their daughter Carol would move into a house right behind her parents where she raised her own daughter, Sherry. Their daughter Mary Rose would also have daughters as well and named them Bobby and Kim. Hermer and Edna stayed very close to their children and were extremely close to their grandchildren. Sherry Baxter said there were lots of benefits of growing up close to their grandparents. She said her grandfather would often be there at the end of the day, waiting for her when the school bus arrived. Bobby Thompson fondly remembers family meals on Sunday when all nine of them would be all together. Sherry's favorite thing about living close to your grandparents as a kid was there were only four channels back then. Everyone had access to, but her grandparents had an antenna, and they had way better TV channels. The family would remain very close, and Hermer and Edna's granddaughters, Bobby and Kim, would remember helping out at the store that they ran. Kim is the youngest granddaughter and doesn't have as many memories of her grandparents since they were killed when she was in third grade. But she does remember every Monday at the corner shop was stock day, and they would help. December 10th, 1973, this tight-knit family and this tight-knit community would forever be changed. This was a time, like always, when nobody locked their doors and they trusted their neighbors. Edna and Hermer would be home on 165 High Street, and at 11 p.m., their store clerk would stop by and drop off the day's receipts from the corner store. Sherry remembers looking out the window at her grandparents' house and seeing their lights were still on after 11 p.m. on a school night and thought that was odd. She thought, well, maybe her grandfather had just returned home from the fire association meeting and that's why they were up so late, and she didn't hear or see anything out of the ordinary. Carol, Sherry's mother, however, had heard two gunshots shortly after 11 p.m. After shots rang out in the night, Carol picked up the phone, called the police at 11:10 p.m. and ran over to her parents' home, where she would find Edna, her mother, already deceased, and her father, Hermer, very badly injured and unconscious, but still alive. Hermer was rushed to Trumbull Memorial Hospital in Warren, where he passed about a half an hour after his arrival, without ever being able to tell investigators what happened. Police were quick to the scene and began investigating. The first thing they noticed was it appeared the motive was robbery, because all the receipts from the store that night were taken, but large amounts of cash were not touched. The rest of the house seemed to be untouched at first glance, except for one room had been ransacked. Investigators would also note that there were no signs of a forced entry or a struggle. When investigators began questioning the neighbors about what they had seen, one of the neighbors would say they had seen a white car pull up to Edna and Herbert's driveway when three men got out, and one of them was carrying something that resembled a broom. Investigators at the time thought what looked like a broom to that neighbor was most likely a 12-gauge shotgun, which would be the weapon used to murder the couple. Investigators wouldn't talk to reporters in the following week, but the very next day, when the community found out about these horrific murders, a $10,000 reward was offered on any information on the people that committed this crime. That reward has still never been collected. Investigators had to find motive to begin to find those responsible for Edna and Hermer's murder. A week before their murder, Edna had made a police report about a counterfeit bill, but had told officers when reporting it that she was afraid to report it for fear of retribution. Did that have something to do with their murders? Investigators now were looking at the unsolved deaths of the Holmquist couple. About 6 months before Edna and Hermer were murdered, Walter Holmquist and his wife, Dorothy, would be murdered during a robbery at their Buzetta Township home in Cortland area. At the time, that murder had yet to be solved. Trumbull County Coroner Dr. Joseph Sudmack told the newspaper that these two cases in the similarities were striking and that a 12-point gauge shotgun was used in both the couple's double homicides. There were a few violent crimes happening in the area that had investigators wondering if they could somehow be connected. The morning that Edna and Hermer were killed, investigators in Trumbull County Sheriff's Office would arrest a woman for shooting her husband in the neighboring town of Wethersfield. And in another township over, a man had just been arrested for picking up two teenage girls at a high school and driving them out to a secluded area and shooting them both. One died and one would survive. So there were lots of events happening very close to where Hermer and Edna were murdered, and investigators had to see if any of those could be connected to what happened to the couple. Sherry's father was also a volunteer firefighter with her grandfather. Because of her grandfather and father's work with the fire department, they knew a lot of police officers. She remembers even now that back then that police and others were free to walk in and out of her grandparents' house while police were investigating the initial crime scene. She said even her father would enter the house and he would be the one that found the shotgun shells in the living room used in the shooting and would give them to investigators on the scene. Bobby and Kim remember being woken up by their parents that night, and their other grandparents had come over to watch them while their parents went to see what they could do to help. When they returned, they would tell Bobby and Kim that there had been a bad accident, and they explained that their grandparents were no longer with them. Kim said she didn't remember much about being told the news. She just remembers being very confused. Kim said, quote, "I really didn't understand what they were telling me. It didn't dawn on me until at the funeral home, Dad took me in his arms to see my grandmother. I swear she moved." Unquote. Kim, Bobby, and Sherry said that their parents took the murder of Edna and Hermer very hard. It affected their everyday lives from there forward. They said that their parents became very quiet, and in their later years, they never forgot to make sure that their doors were locked. It wasn't just their family that changed that day. The local hardware store owner at the time said his sales on home security items such as guns and locks would skyrocket just a week after the couple's murder. The locals were buying more ammunition than normal and for older types of guns that the hardware store owner at the time equated to people now taking their older guns out of storage to be used for home security. Bobby was a student at the high school that year her grandparents were killed. In the weeks after their death, she had a lot of anger and bitterness and didn't know what to do with it. That's when she would decide to try to find out what happened to her grandparents on her own. After classes or work, she would head to the popular places like El Rio or the Flamingo or the living room by herself to hang out and see if she could find anyone talking about the deaths of her grandparents. But she never did hear anything, and eventually she would stop going. Bobby said, quote, "It's done. You can't find nothing you live your life for and hope the police can do their job," unquote. Investigators had a lot to work with at the beginning, but unfortunately the leads in the beginning didn't bring them any closer to answers, and Hermer and Edna's case would go cold. In 1994, the chief of police, Gary Mink, would reopen the investigation and would write the unsolved mysteries and ask them to spotlight their case. Unfortunately, they declined. The years have gone on, but today the Cortland police say they have not stopped working on their case. Detective John Weston said they have plans to have the state's attorney general cold case unit assist in their department in re-examining Edna and Hermer's case. He said these were their plans, and they were already setting those plans in motion just before COVID-19 hit the world in March 2020. And that did put a lot of things on pause. They said now they expect to be in touch with the attorney general's office again soon. Weston said, quote, "We're hoping to get them involved again in the future," unquote. Investigators confirm they have 3 boxes of evidence from Edna and Hermer's crime scene, and investigators won't divulge what they contain at this time because they don't want to tip off a suspect with what they have. Memories fade and change, so they know time is not on their side with this case. It's most likely going to take evidence collected at the scene to solve this case. Now it's the granddaughters that are continuing to push for their grandparents' murder to be solved. All 3 granddaughters also believe that their grandparents' murder and the Holmquist murders are linked. Back in 1977, investigators got their break and were able to arrest John Tidwell, who is now 73, and charged him with the Holmquist couple's murder. Investigators were able to get an accomplice of John Tidwell's to testify against him during a trial in exchange for immunity. John would go to court pleading guilty, and he would be sentenced to serve time in California before returning to Ohio to begin his sentence for the murders of the Holmquist couple. Bobby, Sherry, and Kim still to this day believe that Tidwell had something to do with their grandparents' death. Kim would reach out to reporters even after almost 50 years and ask them to write about her grandparents' case because they still have hope they will get it solved. Sherry just wishes she could ask who was responsible, why. But Bobby says she doesn't need to know the why. She says, quote, "I don't know if I care why. It's done," unquote. And Sherry has now moved into the same house where her grandparents passed away. She says it's comforting to feel their presence there. Sherry, Bobby, and Kim just want to know who stole their grandparents from them. They want them to be held accountable and for Hermer and Edna to finally have their justice. The only reason that I know about this case at all is because of the journalist Joe Gorman, who works for WKBN27, who wrote a great article about Hermer and Edna's case, and were able to give Kim, Bobby, and Sherry a voice and a platform to tell their story. I will link that article in the show notes and on my website. Please share Edna and Hermer's case in any format that you feel comfortable with. Hopefully, bringing their case back into the spotlight can bring forth new information to help solve this case and finally bring these 3 granddaughters the answers they deserve. Thank you so much for listening to another episode. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, I would truly appreciate if you could hit that subscribe or leave a review or both. This helps others find this podcast, which is going to help get these cases to more listeners. Don't forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts, to hit share, like, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.